Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Lower the curtain down. Lower the curtain down, alright. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have known.
Oh, that was The Church, Under the Milky Way Tonight. I really like that song. I was just saying to Hatter before, I really like that song because the whole thing with that song is it's got a bass singer rather than a tenor singer, and it's one of those songs that Australians kind of like. It's like a 1980s pub classic, and it was used in the Commonwealth Games here. We held Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, and it was used, Hatter, in one of the tunes, and they actually had a bloody great big tram, and they had it flying across the stadium to the music of Church, Under the Milky Way Tonight. And I don't know why, but it really appealed to me. Anyway, welcome, Hatter. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. Yeah, it sounds like a commercial song.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's kind of fun. I kind of like it. Anyway, there you go. And we don't have Deb tonight. And so we our normal programming, which was going to be around frogs here at a team of voices on allpoetry.com, we have popped across to next week. Do you like that, Hatter? A nice little connection.
Yeah.
There. We've hopped it to next week, and we're gonna do frogs next week because we've got frog poems and a collaboration to do and all that sort of stuff. And it's our 40th collaboration, so we didn't want to rush it and, lose that opportunity because you only turn 40 once, Hatter, I found. And after you get to 40, everything tends to slide away. But we do have Stephen with us, I think, temporarily, on occasion. Stephen, is that correct?
Yeah, for a little while. How are you guys
Very
doing?
Good. So, no, we're good. We're good. I was going to sort of, just talk about some of the important weekly events, Hatter, and I don't know what you had on mind, but that was my sort of starting point.
Well, I had my stacked week of shows the other week. I got nothing scheduled, but Saturday. Sort of been filling
well,
in.
Well, it is. It's Saturday. I wanted to note the grounding of that bloody great big ship in the Suez Canal, Adam.
Yeah.
Because
what a mess.
It has now been stuck for the best part of a week, and there are some thousands of ships that are sort of sitting either side of it, and there is no easy fix to this. I don't know whether you've seen what they've been doing. Have you seen what they've been doing to try and unstick this thing?
Well, I know they were trying to unload some of it.
Well, I haven't done that yet because there's actually sand on either side of it. But have you seen what they've been doing, Stephen, to try and shift it?
No, I have not. I'm actually looking it up right now.
No, well, they've taken six tugs in, which is a good start, and they've sort of lassoed six tugs to one side, and they're trying to pull at it. But the other thing that they've done, which I thought was sort of, you know, intriguing, was that somebody had found one of these backhoes. You know, the ones with the great big sort of grabber arms. And they'd sat this backhoe on the side of the sand, and they were pushing at it with the bucket. Now, I've got to say, if there's a 460-meter ship that's stuck in sand, I'm thinking that probably a single backhoe with a bucket's not going to do much. That's just me.
No.
This thing's the size of two Empire State Buildings, and you're having a go at it with a single backhoe. I'm thinking you've got donkeys and none are shifting.
Yeah.
Now, who owns this ship?
It's an Evergreen ship, Hatter.
Is that Norwegian?
Evergreen Marine. I'm looking it up now. Who are they? Let's have a look.
Okay.
Evergreen Marine. It's got About Us somewhere. Here we go. About Us. There you go. That's usually a good sign. About Us. And I will tell you eventually who these guys are. But it's it's got nice branding on the side of it.
That says a few attempts today failed. Those high tides.
Yes. 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 It's not a great thing, is it, Hatter? They've sort of. It was coming though, and I know that sounds weird, but this was always going to happen because the Suez Canal was sort of constructed in the 1860s,
right.
And it's still about the same size as what it was. So it's not a great surprise that at some point that this was going to be an issue.
Yeah, the whole project was cursed with politics and money and favors and get back.
Oh, for sure.
An interesting story how that was built. Great idea, should have been done right the first time, but with all the wars and the power grabs and political bullshit.
Two, not one. Evergreen Marine Corporation is a Taiwanese container transportation and shipping company headquartered in Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Taiwanese. There you go.
Yeah, who didn't see this thing coming down the road?
Well, I don't know. Jesus, they've got a lot of ships. They've got so many ships.
Yeah.
I'm talking they've got 300 ships.
Well, some of those don't have a choice.
Well, you either go through the Suez Canal or you do a two-week circumnavigation of Africa, Adam. That's your choice.
Yeah, I think some of them don't have that option, if I heard the news right.
Well, some of them aren't.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, some of them aren't as well organized as others, Adam. And it's you've got to have clothes and fuel and all sorts of stuff to go around Africa. It's not a lot of fun. Just ask the early explorers. You know, they all, if they'd have the Suez Canal, they'd go down the Suez Canal every day of the week. They wouldn't go around the Cape of Good Hope.
I didn't read. What I heard yesterday was up to the point of this is the crisis. This is what's going on. I didn't hear how it happened. I mean, was this an attentive act?
Well, there was a sandstorm, Hatter. Go figure. It's in the middle of the desert. It sort of happens that way.
Oh.
There was a sandstorm. Uh-huh. And so people, lost control of this thing because, there was a sandstorm.
Sure, just the broad side of that. Yeah, I could see.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
it,
yeah. No,
like
they just, I mean, you've got to travel at the same rate, or otherwise you're stuck because they're too big. Yeah, huge. But anyway.
Who governs the fact that what ships and what size goes through there?
It's disrupting trade
every
routes.
Size.
The
biggest ships in the world go through there.
It's made, it's huge. Stuff, products that's made in Taiwan.
Well, the problem is, Stephen, that just about every product in the world in terms of shipping goes through the Suez Canal. And so basically got a whole thing of ships not in the ports.
Yeah, so everybody's it's because of this thing.
Everybody's stuck. Yeah. So and so there's gonna be the shortages of all sorts of strange things happening in the next, you know, couple of months.
Including rubber
stuff. Yeah, just about anything. You name it.
Can't dig a big hole and bury it right there, huh?
Yeah. So, anyways, it's a major problem. It's not just that one ship.
Like you said, it's 300 other cargo ships.
Yeah, waiting to get by.
You can put the economy to their knees.
So, No, it's... Don't get me wrong. It's a significant issue. I'm not sure how you write a poem about it, but it's a significant issue.
Yeah.
Iran was blockading the oil go through the Formosa.
The Straits of Hormuz.
Okay. Yeah, that must
Straits
be
of
a
Hormuz lead into the canal.
Political wildfire. Oh. I mean.
I'm serious. I'm
talking
serious.
About an ant trying to move.
We've got a problem.
Yeah.
So bring in a backhoe. Yeah? What the proverbial were they thinking? Really? Seriously? Yeah?
I know.
Yeah? Can any
better,
problem
be
fixed by a backhoe?
That is comical.
AP, you break it up, AP.
Oh, okay. But I'm just like, you know, really, seriously, folks, you know, you've got to be able to do better than
that's
that.
Right. Yeah,
better than
big
that,
boat.
Sort of. Yeah, and these are all the ships in Circle Docks that are caught up in the disaster. And so if you expand that, there's about 300-400.
Wow.
Say how many containers are they taking containers off? Still
no, not as yet, Hatter, because where it's stuck, there's sand. There's no concrete or rock, so there's no way to get the containers off.
Ah, like I said,
the best you
can
do would be
somebody already wrote a poem about that backhoe. So it's been around for years.
Oh, did they?
Something about that little old ant moving that rubber tree plant.
Yeah. little thing.
I love the backhoe. I love the backhoe. I think the backhoe is quality, Stephen. I really do. Yeah.
I think I can. It works.
Yeah.
I know that there's a big insurance cut coming when there's a backhoe involved. You know, being chosen to be the operator.
Well,
I
think.
Well, yeah.
What do you want me to do?
For the backhoe or the ship?
Backhoe.
Not the backhoe. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Back up.
I mean, it's dangerous when you're falling into the water, by the way. And then you have to get the backhoe out.
I think the post office is called Freebies. Well, you get down there and pick
it. Anyways, so there you go. The world event of the week, the bloody great big Taiwanese ship that is sitting sideways in the Suez Canal. And probably impossible to do a poem about.
Have they written about who's going to be affected the most and how great effect is it going to be? I mean, these ships got to turn around. You know, I don't know.
Oh, no, it's not easy. It's not easy, Hatter. Whatever it is, it's not going to be easy. It's going to take weeks.
And how many miles is it from the is it the Mediterranean?
I thought it was about a couple of hundred, all things included.
A couple hundred miles? Wow.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow. Well, maybe we should go handle this.
Anyway. Well, they're not handling it very well at the minute. So maybe it wouldn't hurt at us.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do the old we could do the think tank on this, Hatter.
Hey, everybody get out and push.
We could do the think tank. We could do the think tank. We should being quite serious, we should do the think tank on this.
Well, first of all, you got to get containers off that ship somehow. So you got to bring in the double-bladed Hueys, big helicopters,
yeah,
and find a place to spot this.
Maybe the
weight off that thing.
Yep, maybe helicopters for the containers. Yep, you'd need decent helicopters,
yeah,
but if they're out there.
Maybe we can take the ballasts and create more ballast to lift at high tide.
Well, I'm just wondering whether or not
even if it's just an incident one way or another, give those tugs a little help.
Well, I'm just wondering whether you could block off the part of the canal that the ship's in somehow, because it's not that big. So you put two bloody great big fences either side of it, and then you fill it up with water and give it more ballast.
There you go.
Mm. Yeah. I'm
wondering whether it's easier to get more ballast than to try and make it less ballast by offloading the ship. It's a reverse thing here. Yeah. You try and put more water in and make it more ballasty than you do to try and make it less. Because I reckon it's going to take 2-3 weeks to take enough containers off to get rid of the weight. Because this is one of these super ships carrying 10,000 containers.
Yeah, it's huge. How about cutting another aisle through there beside it?
Oh, well, they're talking about doing that. They've been talking about doing that for years, but you can't be able to do that take you 3-4 years to do, Adder. But good idea, but it's not going to work in less than 3-4 years. You wouldn't want it shut.
Yeah, I'd say first off, you got to get those helicopters, and you got to get those thing unloaded as much as you can. Whatever you got to do with what's on there.
Well, I sort of think. I'd go the alternate things, yeah? I would actually try and put more water in, number one. Or number two, I'd actually dig another canal around the front of the ship.
Yeah.
So actually dig something so that you could use the engines of the ship to move the ship halfway out of the way, so you could put ships in behind it.
Yeah.
The massive container ships can 1,300 feet.
It's not rock. It's not rock. It's sand. So it's not hard to dig it. You just need a whole heap of, well, you don't need one bloody bucket digger. You need about 500 of the bloody things.
Yeah. Now,
so,
big wheels.
Well, big wheels. You could use a big wheel. Or, Hannah, alternatively, you could use bloody great big, like, blimps below it. Like, have those big air blimp suction things and just lift the bastard up using the air blimps.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous because what you'd do is you'd put them on one side and you'd lift them up so it was sort of so it would fall on its side onto the sand.
Go ahead and change the center of gravity and let it.
Roll off. Funny great big air balloons below one side of it, and then pump them up so that it would topple onto the sand next to the canal.
That's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. But
I don't mind.
But then, you got to take the top containers off of there somehow so you have some.
The problem is, it's just almost impossible to get the containers off. That's the problem. Because they're so heavy. And so I think you have to say, well, stuff the containers and what's in them. They're gone. You know, let's just lift the damn thing up so we bust everything. But at least it's out of the way.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah, exactly. Because it's not going to get any better.
Or you could do it with demolition. You could do it with demolition fireworks in the same way. You know, take off half the side of the boat and then make it fall on its side.
Wow. I'd like to be in those meetings these people are having on what to do. I wonder if they're talking about some kind of thing.
I hope they're thinking like
blow it up.
No, well, seriously. You know, it's probably going to cost them more money now to salvage the vessel than it is to actually blow the thing up or get it out of the way.
It reminds me of that whale that got beached up on the Oregon shore here in the States.
Yeah.
They decided what they were going to do was blow it to smithereens. Well, they didn't use enough dynamite. They rained 200-pound slabs of blubber on cars and everybody watching.
It reminds me of a conversation I had with an Uber driver in Florida when I was there. And the guy was talking to me because he had a swimming pool, and one day he came home and found an alligator in it. And so he rang up Alligators R Us, effectively, and he said, what do I have to do to get rid of the alligator? And the guy said, well, do you want it dead or do you want it alive? And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, if you want a dead alligator, this is, you know, half the price. So I'll just go in there, stick a bullet in it, and we'll get rid of it for you. If you want the alligator alive, it's going to cost you twice as much because I have to actually go and, you know, get myself in there and get this bloody live alligator and then transport it somewhere where alligators live. So your choice. And he said, no, I want it alive. And so he actually paid the money for it to go to, you know, get removed in a live state.
Wow. That was mighty nice of him.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have to do that. He could have blown up the ship or blown up the alligator by looking at it.
I'm reading an article here while you guys are talking, and it says it's already starting to affect the global economy as oil prices jumped on Friday. Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Yep. There you go.
So what they're going to decide to do, they got to do it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, they're going to have to do something, Patter, or otherwise, they're going to really struggle.
Yeah, you could, in certain countries, you could topple their economy. And that's an eye opening statement that something like this could. I mean, wars have been fought and lost over stuff like this.
Yeah, well, you know, they've lost the evergreen marine shipping price has lost. Where are we? 4 cents. They've lost about 10% of their value. They've lost $20 billion on their share price since this ship got stuck.
How much extra is it costing all the companies that are sitting there waiting, too? These people had certain...
Well, the thing is, Stephen, that each of those boats would have insurance on them, having done this before.
Yeah.
So once upon a time, I used to take 50 boats from America, China, and Saudi Arabia, and they're probably more than that, 75 boats a year, into Australia. And we used to have insurance on each of those boats. There was delay insurance, for want of a better word, disruption insurance. And so the people are actually up for the money are the insurance companies, because they will have taken on that these boats will have arrived on time and they're all stuck. So the great question will be, will the insurance companies decide not to pay for it? And the best way not to pay for it is to call a force majeure event. So I suspect that's what's happening at the minute, that in the world of marine, that every single insurance company will call force majeure, and so none of the boats are actually insured.
Wow. Yeah.
So that last picture I just dropped on the room, see all the boats out there sitting there just waiting.
Have a look.
That's it. You put in the
team of voices.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't remember that.
Got it.
There it is.
Anyways, not great publicity, really, is it?
But
there are a lot. Oh, wow, there is a lot of folks, aren't there? But, I mean, look at the amount of containers on that thing, Hatter. Imagine trying to unload that.
Yeah.
With a helicopter or two or 25.
Yeah, I'm still running down the hall to get to the picture here.
No, it's okay. I'm just, I just picked it up as a, major subject, and, poetry should be about big subjects and major subjects, and I just look at that boat and I think, Jesus Christ, how would you unlock that?
It doesn't even look like a ship. Just a big barge.
I still think it's better just to stick a really great balloon under it and just let it roll on its side and just go bang, That's, my best idea I think I've come up with so far.
That is a lot of containers. My Lord.
Oh, yeah. Make a hell of a bang, by the way, Hatter. When it went sideways.
Yeah.
It went sort of belly up. I mean, you'd hear it going bang. Just saying.
Yeah, I'd like to know the dimensions. How much room you have on each side, underneath, in front, in reverse, kind of angles.
Not much is the short
answer. And like you said,
not much. That's why the blimp would work. That's why the blimp would work. It's so big that you wouldn't need to do much to change the angle of orientation. It's so heavy at the top as well. The more I look at it, the more I think what a wonderful idea that is. By the way, I hope people are listening to this. The recovery people and stuff, but. have actually found our poetry show and they're listening to this excellent idea that I have had.
You know, you take a couple of big Hueys, you could do some damage off that top row, get a little centered gravity to work for you.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yep, I'm with you. 100%. 100%. Anyways, there you go. So that's the world of global international trade for you in this patter and AP discussion on things that aren't frogs. And Hatter, what else has been intriguing you about the world in the past little time?
I've been trying to get into this 316 of the March Madness.
Yes.
It hasn't been good because all the games are playing on ESPN and such, and I don't get the satellite. So
I did write one poem this week, Hatter. Well, apart from the frog ones, which we're not talking about, but I did write one poem, and I had to write it because It was a poem contest by G. Lars. And, of course, G. Lars, you know, does come by and help us now and again. So I was sort of preempted to think that I should help G. Lars. And he had a series of poems about scary bears. And he basically said, write a poem about a scary bear, but also, if you've got some silliness, that would help. Extra points for silliness, he said. And it's got to be about bears. And I sort of thought to myself, I've got to be in this, you know. I mean, it's that sort of moment where you say, I'm doing something about this issue right now. So I'm going to put my poem up on the board that I actually wrote about this, just for the fun of it. Because it's about bears, right? I want you to know it's about bears. But in addition, it is perfectly silly. It seems to fit with our mood for today. So bear with me as I change the theme from... And Thanks for dropping by and putting stuff on the board. That was cool. So here we go. Ready?
Yeah. Ready.
Thanks again, Stephen. Have a good evening.
Yeah, thanks,
this is of bears, and it goes a bit like this. The campsite was empty except for us two, and the sun sank down fast, leaving darkness before dew. While there was a rustle, and then suddenly this huge boom, which scared the living hell of us well into June. Another huge guttural roar, blood curdling in its force, we knew there was a predator, but in the dark of what course? It seemed behind us, the next one ahead, was echoed around the valley. We packed up our spread. We put on our torches, path narrow so dark find, as we ran out of the bush, could hear scurrying behind. Raced harder still and down back to our car, turned on the engine and drove to a town far. There a 24-hour hotel, so we asked what was there. His answer was simple. Y'all were chased by a drop bear, which made us feel pretty stupid, because koalas leaves crave, or maybe us that night, has chased us to an early grave. End poem.
That's what
it's pretty silly. Isn't that a great looking koala? It looks angry.
Yeah, it does. It's all wet.
It looks angry. I guess it's completely soaked. I mean, if I was completely soaked, I'd probably be angry too. But there you go. That was the early Australians used to take great fun in telling overseas visitors that there were drop bears, which were koalas, which bloody great big teeth had up, and they don't exist. If there's just koalas. But they are loud. So,
yeah.
That was my soul. That was my soul, as you'll hear when you come here. That was my sole additional poem for the week. It was about soaking wet koalas chasing away people. That was it.
Now, are koalas, are they actually... bear species? I mean, they are a bear.
No, they're closer to wombats than anything else, koalas. They're very distinctively different.
Okay. Maybe more of a sloth.
Yeah, more like that.
Yeah, that's one pissed off bear.
I love the photo of the pissed off bear. I thought it looked really cool. You know, I mean, what's not to like about a pissed off koala?
Really? I mean, I guess like any other wild animal, they could do you some damage, right?
Oh, look, you know, koalas are, you know, they can get angry as anything else, you know. They've obviously got decent-sized claws because they hold onto trees, you know.
Yeah. They're eucalyptus eaters, right?
Yep, they are. Yep. And if you've even smelt some of that stuff, you'd know eating it wouldn't be any fun.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they're just horrible, horrible taste. So, you know, you have a diet full of that, then you're not going to be, you know, particularly interested. So, anyway, there you go. I am going to put, can I put one of my frog poems up on the board, though, if that's okay?
Yeah, sure.
Just, I haven't even posted it yet, but I just thought, it's got really nice rhyme, internal rhyme. So I've just put it up on the board, and I was just going to just read it, Hatter, if that's okay?
Yes.
Because I kind of like it. Anyway, see what you think. An unnamed piece that goes a bit like this. Tufts sprout in the tidal marshes about where sea scraggy trees leap. Saltwater rushes in swirls of curls to curve sweep. Eve's skies are flushed in orange. Stars line up for the hand of Mars. Seconds later into ink, seen to gleam a carpet of stars. Rippling base upon oily motion, fillers turgid into deep black bogs, faces lost in disdain, while the croaks resile of frogs. Rustle of reeds by sway of wings, birds gather into swarming teas. Deftly slither sleek taipans, abide in tide of water sleeves. It's got an internal rhyme going in the last line, and then it's got the second and the fourth going in a different way.
You know, that's a trick to be able to go into a certain pattern and then come back out of it. Sometimes it doesn't work. You got to be aware of.
I actually like it because sometimes it limits the options for me when I write. Yeah, it's
you end up
a bit like the word bank.
Yeah,
a bit like the word bank.
If you do the pause,
you know, they put
right,
a restriction about what you can do.
You put a long enough pause when you're reading it, you can restart. You know, just restart.
If you try flowing
from one end to the other, then you're tripping on stuff. So it's all about how it's being read, too. So.
Yeah, it was interesting. This was a poem I sort of found. I had an original, it was like 6x4 poem, and I turned it into a 4x4 when I redid it. But it was a very old poem, it wasn't particularly interesting before. Now I think it's kind of got something. But anyway, there you go.
I like going back to my earlier stuff and rewriting, restructuring some of my earlier stuff. That's not a bad idea to do. I should have been doing that in my little block here. I'm going through.
I think it's a useful trick if you're struggling to get something started, Patter. And I mean, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly older stuff, because oftentimes with the older stuff, you've moved on, and this was like an AABB style poem originally, and I looked at it, and it was quite long, And it sort of sat on the page, but it sort of just sort of was a bit stiff, for want of a better word. It just didn't rock and roll along. And so I just sort of thought, well, why not? You know, let's go back, let's do it. I very rarely do it, but it was an interesting little exercise, and I ended up with a much better poem, I think, for doing that.
Yeah, no, there lies the question. Do you rewrite the whole poem, or do you leave the original alone?
I think you end up. I've got both still, Hannah. I've got this one and I've got the old one. But it was always going to be that I was going to struggle this week because I was up in Sydney for 3 days, and that sort of made it, you know, harder to get everything done. But I do have what I like to do, Hannah, when I'm up in the air, is I like to fly. When I fly, is I like to take photos. So I finally had a chance to take a photo from a plane for the first time in, you know, like 6 months. So I was quite excited about that.
I went to walk through my vault. I found one that I really enjoyed writing.
And that's good. Let's do that.
If I was to put my top 20, this would definitely be among them.
Okay, cool. Let's read that.
That's a can of 10 shades of gray. It was like this. I watched a blind man painting on a blustery cold winter's day. He asked me if I had with me a can of 10 shades of gray. I heard a musician playing under a hot summer moon. He asked me if I had written the songs that made him blue. I saw a preacher preaching one glorious springtime dawn, rhyming words and questions, singing a biblical psalm. I left a poor man wishing for the dreams that never came true. The sky he kept reaching for, did you know that I loved you? I've learned how to see it all differently, painted on a colored pretense, in a world of simple complexity, pretending you know what it meant.
Yeah. Very nice. Why do you like that one, Hannah? Tell me why you like that one.
Why do I like it?
Why do you like it?
I like how I started each one. Each stanza could stand alone. I watched a blind man painting on a cold, blustery, cold winter's day. I watched a musician playing on a hot summer moon, under a hot summer moon. Saw a preacher preaching one glorious springtime dawn.
Yes.
A poor man wishing for the dreams that never came true.
Yes.
And I wrote it right when that Fifty Shades of Grey movie book was out, and I knew nothing of the movie, nothing of the book, and everybody was commenting
on the connection between the two.
On the connection between the two, and even Kevin said you might want to retitle that, and I refused to. That would go away, and my poem will still be here.
No. It's a great title. I'd leave it alone.
We got some great comments on that also. That's cool. I like running through the vault once in a while.
Yeah, no, it's good fun.
You know, I've noticed I don't know if it's just the chapter in my life right now that I approach writing differently than I did. It used to be exhausting to write. I don't know, done an easier way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sort of the opposite, Hatter. I'm still trying to, I think, get all the stuff out of my head that was there that wanted to be written for all these years, remembering that I only started writing 5 years ago or so. So I haven't sort of got to the point where I found it hard to write.
Yeah, that's where I am. I need to look out a different window.
Your poem does remind me of one of mine, Hatter. So I'm going to put that one up because it sort of dances around a subject that reminds me of this one. So this is Bluegrass, and it goes a bit like this. Talk shows speak of loss gloomy, stirring a grey sky. I'm locked down on paints as bluegrass sweeps by. Blocks drift of steel clouds feed lazy autumn mists. Okay, no longer truck driving, year of oil chasing wisps. Searching rare showers, hills forward, valleys trace. Spatula is laid heavy, shades fall into space. Touched by brushstroke, silence of shorter days. Loneliness in cabin weeks, television voices do raise. Grasses canvas warming fills my landscape's frame, captures hazes around me. With an easel I paint rain. End poem.
Yeah, how do you paint rain?
With an easel I paint rain.
What's this? What a lovely poet. Okay. Reminding me of one, I don't know, we used to hang with Miss Lou Yu.
Yes.
And it reminded me of that time. But about a month ago.
She still occasionally used to hit the Soul Asylum stuff. So I used to hear her occasionally in the Soul Asylum piece, Hatter. She does have a very distinctive a signature to her writing.
Yes, she does. They're very spiritual.
Yeah, very connected would be the way I'd describe it. You know, very, very of time and place.
Dreams that fade away. I want rainbows in the dark. I just looked at some of my other.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at how many pieces I've written.
Yeah. I mean, I think we sort of go back and have a look sometimes at stuff, and it's interesting in the context how it looks. Yeah. And sometimes you attach a time and a place to a poem that you write. So,
you know, I've noticed that even some of mine, I can see the inflection of like Pam Ray or Miss Lou Yu. From the past. And a lot of them with Deborah Lee.
It's interesting. I mean, I think that you know, it for me, poetry is a bit like, I don't know. It you know, you can attach something to a smell or something, and poetry, I guess, you can attach to an event in the same way in your head.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Smell is the
the
strongest trigger of nostalgia.
Yeah. Well, I've written about sort of disinfectant and perfume and all sorts of stuff before. But you're right, it is. It's a very strong trigger.
Let's see if this one triggers. There we go, I think.
Right.
I remember this one. It is called 369. the prompt was a video of this guy. Yeah. You hear me okay? The prompt was a video of a guy saying that the friendships that he has, basically he had 400 and some friends, but he was still lonely. And they, you know, being that the technology, how we consider having friends before the computers and the social media, your friends were tighter, smaller, circles were smaller, unable to reach out as well like you can now. So I wrote to that prompt. It's called 369. And I was like this. I counted up all the list contacts that were all mine. I'm sure it's my keyboard's life that added to 369. 369, I counted again, the number that sums my life. 113, I have never met. 2, became my wife. 23, I love dearly. 68, I could have phoned. 22, still makes me smile. But only one knows I'm alone. 17, I remember dating. 33, I wish I had. 7, had a piece of my heart. But only one knows why I'm sad. 35, I have recently met. 41, I remember well. 4, I might still owe money to. But when I'm happy, only one can tell. 55, I can't hear a voice. 47, asks about me. 9, I called when needing a friend. But there's only one that sits with me. 27, I called teammates. 17, hugged me when I was blue. 6, I never told I love them. And only one, I never had to.
Well, it comes back to one, doesn't it? You can talk about
the one.
Can talk about a whole heap of numbers. You can talk about a mile of friends, but it comes back to one.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did. No. I don't know how I met it. If I even got a medal on that contest.
Yeah.
6 years ago. On the phone, I can't see.
Yeah. What's it say here? Well, it was even before I started writing at it, but you got an honorable mention.
Honorable mention, okay. I remember back then I would only enter big contests, you know, 50 to 100,
right?
Anything in between. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, I think we all go. I haven't been entering contests at all, Patter, for the last period, at all.
Oh, me either. I did a couple.
Yeah.
Maybe a handful last year. Contest.
Yep. I probably, you know, I've done maybe 5 this year. Yeah, maybe 1 a month. So, you know, I just, you know, you just go with the flow really, and whatever works. And I like the use of numbers there, Hatter. I like numbers full stop. You know, numbers are a good thing, but it's you don't see them often in poetry. You don't see numbers often in poetry. You probably should see them more.
Yeah, I noticed that. I remember some of the comments that I was getting was they expected them all. If they added them all up, it would equal 369. Well, that's not the way it goes, but it got me thinking.
Really.
Post, okay. It got me thinking post-write on why did I pick the numbers, because the only answer I had is what number sounded good there.
Yeah. Oh, I like
you
that.
Know,
I like the randomness of the fact that you choose the number that sounds right rather than anything else. I think that's cool.
Yeah, and it sounded pretty shallow when I was answering because they were expecting something a little more deeper. But
well... But,
yeah, it was more about reflection than it was about the numbers, to me.
Well, exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah.
The numbers were there to illustrate the purpose of the write. They weren't there as a something in their own accord. I mean, sort of reminds me of Douglas Adams, and when he was talking about, you know, these people who built this massive computer, which ended up being the Earth, which basically was there to answer the question of what was the answer of life, the universe, and everything. Yeah. And these people came back after a couple of years, and the computer said, no, I need a couple more million years. Right? So then, you know, generations down the track, these people finally arrived after 4 million years and said, okay, so what is the answer of life, the universe, and everything? And the thing came back and said, 42. And they said, what do you mean, 42? And he said, 42. Just like, okay, righto, that's the answer. Well, away they went.
That's kind of an eeriness to it.
Douglas Adams was asked, is there anything special about 42? And he said, no, it was just the first number that came to me.
Wow.
So that's how I sort of view the numbers there. That's just sort of the first number
don't
that
go
came to you. Adam.
Yeah, don't go spelunking where there's no hole. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Yep. Great way to put it. Yep. So
that's interesting. Interesting.
But so I don't know, Hatter.
Like the one question no computer, like the one question that the computer can't answer.
Oh,
why?
I don't. Well,
why?
Good question. What is the one question that computers don't answer?
Why?
We struggle to answer that one ourselves, mostly, Hatter. You know.
Yeah. You do your best.
Yeah. Yeah. You just. I think half the time the answer to why is just showing up.
Why not?
Yeah. And that's the answer to why. You know, you show up, and then it's sort of the answer is why not.
Yeah, and when you ask the question, why are we here? What is it all about? What does it mean? Is there something we are missing in this plane of existence that will be explained later, or will we never know? Or just asking
well,
that question in itself is the word. It's almost shallow in its depth. I mean.
Well,
the
short and long of it is, Hatter, that, you know, possibly it's there to reinforce the fact that we actually will never know what we don't know in the first place, in the sense that there's some things we'll know, there's things we don't know, and there's things we don't know that we don't know.
Yeah, and why are there planes of existence we can't touch, feel, or even know that they're there? I mean, we know they're there, we just can't.
And that's a really good question. That's a really good question, and I wish I knew the answer to that, but I don't, you know. I mean, it's a cargo ship that's stuck in the Suez Canal, Hatter, you know.
There you go.
It's, you know, it's a bit like the Suez, it's a bit like what the heck, you know, we're.
The older and wiser I get, if you can imagine that, I tend to agree with the writers that tend to go along with the thought of we're not supposed to know everything, we won't know everything. Every time we find something, there's 20 more questions asked. But the journey and the hunger to know will always be there. And that's the hunger that feeds the mind.
And that hunger will actually nourish and feed us, Hatter. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Q on Star Trek. They know it all. All they do, it's all answered to them. They know it all, so they stand around and stare down the road. There's nothing left.
That's right. But imagine knowing everything. What would that sort of wouldn't feel right either, you know? It feels better to me to be inquiring. Yeah.
Well, you would have to, then you'd start prioritizing what what is important to you and what is not. And
yeah.
You end up staring down the road. You end up staring down the road.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, how do I reckon we finish up? I reckon we've done well. I reckon we've had fun.
I think we should give Elon Musk a call about this Suez Canal problem. See what he says.
I think I should listen to our section. I think they'd get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna dig deeper a little bit and see what they're talking about, the conversation is anyway.
Yeah, I'd be fascinated to know what they're doing. Yeah, so.
Because we can fly out of here and we could meet over there, you know, in 2 days.
I know. And handle this thing for us.
Yeah.
But why not? I mean, you know, there's stranger things to do than check for a couple of bucks, you know.
Bring the balloons. Just bring the balloons.
So. Anyway, I'm going to play Under the Milky Way tonight, Patter, and we will catch up for Frogs next week with Deb.
Yeah, actually, I'd love to say it's
been a pleasure talking. And to all of our listeners out there, I hope you found something in there. There was a real mix, so something for everybody apart from shipping. And we'll catch everybody with Froggies for next week. And until then, have a great week. Have a great week, Hatter. And we'll talk very soon.
And thanks for calling in, Stephen.
And yes, thanks to Stephen for calling in for his pictures too. Bye, everybody.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Lower the curtain down. Lower the curtain down, alright. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have known what
Bye, everybody. We will see you next week for Frogs. See you later.
Bye.
See you later. See you.